This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Preschool teachers, as you might imagine, have lots of funny stories to tell. But former preschool teacher Josh Gondelman has raised those stories to professional level. He tells many of them on his comedy CD, Everything's the Best. He lives in New York City now, but is in town with the School's Out for Summer tour, along with comedian Chip Chantry. They will appear at DSI Comedy Theater in Carrboro tonight at 9 o'clock. But first, they join us in our studio now. Josh, Chip, good to have you here.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Great to be here. Thanks for having us, Frank.
My pleasure. So, Josh, tell us about this. You're a preschool teacher, a pretty good training for stand-up, you say?
Yeah, it involves a lot of flexibility, and you certainly need a sense of humor. The kids really keep you on your toes.
How long had you wanted to be a comedian?
Since I was really little, like I would have joke books and I would, like when I was a little, like when I learned to read and I would try to convince my parents, like, you got to let me go on stage and do this. And they're like, it's different. And I'm like, nah, I got it.
What were you reading that made you want it to be funny?
I read like a lot of like children's, like funny kids books. And then I actually had joke books. So it'd be like jokes about dinosaurs. And I would just have, I would memorize 10 jokes about dinosaurs and be like, this is my Tonight Show set. Don't worry about it.
How about you, Chip? How long have you wanted to be a funny man?
Just about as long as Josh. I used to watch stand-up comedy on TV when my friends were watching cartoons. I had no idea what they were talking about because I would be sitting watching stand-up comedy, and that's what I always wanted to do.
Well, that's interesting. When you don't know the actual content, then you're really picking up the rhythm, if nothing else, right?
Oh, absolutely. Which can hurt or hinder you because I think stand-up comedy in 1989 was a little bit different than now, but it absolutely, you get your chops by watching.
So do you remember the first time you actually did it either professionally or in front of an audience that wasn't drinking and about to, you know, dance at the wedding?
I do. Actually, the way I started, my brother is in a band in Philadelphia, and I was always hanging out with the band, and they thought I was funny, and they knew I wanted to try comedy. So they booked me to open for them for one of their gigs without telling me until about – I was walking through the city, and I saw one of their flyers on a signpost. And it said, with comedy guest Chip Chantry. I called my brother immediately and I said, what is this about? And he said, we were going to tell you tonight. In 2 weeks, you're going to perform.
Well,
and that was my...
How'd it go?
It went surprisingly well, which probably in hindsight was awful. But for me, it was enough to give me the adrenaline to not sleep for 3 days. And I was hooked from there.
And you were a teacher too.
I was. I taught fourth grade for 13 years.
Josh, how about you, the first time you stood up before an anonymous audience?
Oh, man. A friend of mine, like right after high school, I think, would run these coffee houses at a local – I think it was like in a local UU church or something. And I think I did it twice. And one of the times I was like, all right, I worked on my material. And it was very shticky and Seinfeldy. So I was like, why do I have small and medium? It should just be small and large. Like it was just two sizes. And I just tanked. And my friend Sam, who's not a comedian, who's just a funny dude, went on and did like a Jim Morrison spoken word piece and just crushed. Everyone was cracking up. And I was like, oh, man.
But do you have to do that, do you think, on the journey to become a professional comedian? You have to start out imitating, don't you?
Oh, yeah. I think it's like the more experienced you get, the less you try to wear your influences on your sleeve. But I think when you start out, if you have no comedy influences, chances are you're going to do something that's not exactly comedy.
You have a great story about having to address gay marriage in the classroom of your preschool.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's the kind of thing that kind of comes up naturally because there were all the girls, all the little girls in my class are hassling this very popular little boy, Matthew. And they're going, Matthew, marry me, marry. And he goes, I'm sorry, girls, but I'm going to marry Jeremy. And I had to explain. The girls were like, you can't do that. You can't. Boy can't marry a boy. And I became the arbiter of civil liberties for this room full of four-year-olds. And I explained in Massachusetts, where we live, I just want to be very factual. Mm-hmm. Didn't want to put value judgments on it. I said, in Massachusetts, where we live, if two boys want to grow up and marry each other, that's cool. And there was like this tense silence that fell over the classroom until Matthew and Jeremy high-fived really hard and the girls were crushed. It was like,
how about you, Chip? Fourth grade experiences, do they make their way into your routines?
They do, and not as much as the crazy things they say, but it is true. The just their view on the life, they have a little bit more information about the world than the four-year-olds do, but not much, which is interesting. I had a fourth grader make me feel bad about myself one day for not owning a hot glue gun. Like, wrap your head around that. We were doing an arts and craft project, and the nine-year-old boy came up to me and said, hey, Mr. Chantry, do you have a hot glue gun? And I just said, no, I'm sorry. And he got a disgusted look on his face, and he was like, how old are you? And I really started questioning myself, and I realized that.
Well, it might have been a compliment. It's sort of like, you know, the ancient ones, they all have the glue gun. Only us kids don't.
That's right. Maybe he was trying to make me feel good, and I took it the wrong way.
Now, Josh, you had kind of a bad experience working yourself into this. I know that for you, comedy was you ended up working for you – I'm trying to get to the school and make the connection between comedy. Did you work both careers in parallel? Were you always planning to get back to the stage?
I was teaching mostly full-time for about 4 years. And then tutoring in the afternoons and then doing stand-up every night until eventually I was trying to burn a candle at three ends, which most candles don't have.
That's a weird candle.
Yeah, very weird candle. Right. And so this weird candle purchase was making me – I was going broke and I was exhausted driving back and forth to the store. I hadn't heard of eBay. So it eventually became unsustainable. And before – I moved to New York almost exactly a year ago. And right before I moved, I stopped teaching full time. So I still tutor on the side when I'm back in the city, but I have a lot more flexibility to be on the road.
Chip, is there anything about standing in front of a classroom and standing in front of an audience that strikes you as kind of the same thing?
It is. It's when it boils down to it, it's crowd control. That's all it is. Is crowd control at its highest level, and keeping fourth graders occupied for 7 hours a day is just about enough training for keeping adults occupied for 90 minutes at a time.
Now, that's interesting because you have to keep everybody's attention. You get those little kids, so you're very sensitive to when, you know, people are drifting off.
Oh, absolutely. And that's something that people always ask about hecklers. Does that happen?
Right.
And it happens from time to time, but really what's more pervasive is when people are chatting. You know, they get lost and they start talking to their neighbors. And so you have some tools that I've had from the classroom to really – look into that. And a lot of times it's very subtle where I'll stare at them a little bit more, or I'll even, instead of talking over them, I'll actually bring the microphone down, talks more softly so they realize themselves, so they can learn that valuable lesson that somebody else is talking and it's not time for them.
It's not time for them. You just hand them a glue gun and remind them
that
somebody else is in charge. Yeah.
Give them a word search to do.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Here's a highlighter, kids. Just go for it.
Josh, you're Jewish and that's part of your humor. You work that in.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I'm not especially religious, so it's fine to like poke fun at. For me, it's not a very there's nothing taboo about it. My grandmother confessed to me right before I moved that she's an atheist. My other grandmother is like takes being Jewish like a little too seriously. Like she refers to the movie 16 Candles as two menorahs worth of candles.
I see. What's that confession? What prompted that confession?
I have no idea. It was really like this wonderful, amazing talk. I took my grandmother out to lunch and she acted as if no one had ever bought her lunch before. And then she was like, I bought a cake. Or I made a cake. I don't want to impugn her good name by saying store-bought cake. I went back to her house and we had cake and we just talked about the state of the world. And she talked about how she – her political views, like she's becoming more liberal as she gets older. Like she's very pro-choice. And she became an atheist like years and years ago just because she couldn't believe that there would be a God that would let atrocities happen in the world. And it's just like – and I told my dad that and he was like, not only has she never told me those opinions, we've never talked about those subjects.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, this was it. This was the chance to actually – if you're taking her out, now you've got her attention.
Yeah.
These are the things that she'd probably never tell the dad.
No,
so
it was very funny.
That's the great thing about going out with your grandparents. Chip, you performed across the country, including shows like Last Comic Standing, which are – you know, they've got their own frame. And I wonder how that's different from just doing a stand-up routine or doing a standard kind of stand-up routine, I should say.
I think time is a big consideration when you're doing something like that. When I auditioned for that and I made it through a few rounds, they want 2 minutes worth of comedy, 6 minutes worth of comedy, whereas tonight we're each doing about a half hour, 45 minutes. So the pacing is very different. So my style, I feel like, lends itself to a little bit – a longer style, a little bit more storytelling, where that you really have to pick and choose those jokes and get in and out of that really quickly.
Do you find that your material changes or the response to your material changes depending on where you are? Does the regional differences make a difference in terms of audience response?
I think absolutely, 100%. In Philadelphia, things are a little bit more a little more hard edge, and I can get away with a little bit more jokes. And my jokes are by no means raunchy or that edgy, but something that I consider silly in certain areas might seem a little bit more harsh. So
do you know that from experience, or have other comics told you that?
Both. Yeah. And I've had that experience where if I'm somewhere on a Wednesday night, by the end of the week, I'm tailoring my set a little bit just mm-hmm. to maybe take out those harder punches or put something else in, or even just to slow it down and to really let them get to know me as a comedian so they trust me with those jokes.
And where does that happen? I mean, is it in the South, or where does it happen that you have to soften the edge, the least Philadelphia region, part of the country?
We were both in Portland recently, Portland, Oregon, Portland and Seattle, which are beautiful towns, and they're very, very nice people out there, but they are much more reserved and they're much more willing to laugh, but at the same time, they get nervous about certain subject matters.
Yeah, they're almost too nice for hard-edged comedy where I don't know about that.
Yeah, no. You know what? It's interesting that the Pacific Northwest is mm-hmm. Very cool to the point of it's like an irony-free zone.
Yes.
Yeah, it's almost hard to be funny up there.
I think they like very genuine, earnest humor. So the preschool stuff plays great. But if you're if you're trying to be a little bit more satirical, say something a little more arch, they're like, wait a minute, I don't know, there's not a lot of black people here. I don't know if you should be talking about them. We should get some of them involved, get a consensus.
Right. We'll do a charrette, and then you can do the joke.
Sure.
Josh and Chip, great to talk with you. Have fun tonight.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us.
Josh Gondelman and Chip Chantry, comedians. They appear at DSI Comedy Theater in Carrboro tonight. It's part of the School's Out for the Summer tour. For more information, go to DSIComedyTheater.com. Just ahead, former CIA agent T.C. McCarthy breaks into the world of science fiction. You'll hear about it on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.